See a breakdown. We invest our revenues in our system of roads, sidewalks, bike lanes, transit, and trails that Portlanders use every day to get from place to place. And for example, about 30% of our budget goes to basic operations and maintenance of the transportation system. Capital projects make up for 34%, and we also invest in our future through planning and policy functions. Okay, there's a handout I think you all were just provided. So as you can see from this handout, 50% of our total revenue comes from federal, state, or local agencies and partners. 90% of our capital improvement program is made up of state and federal funds. And as Commissioner Novick has repeatedly said, PBOT's budget really depends on the kindness of strangers. And these kindnesses come with strings attached. We don't have full control over how we spend our money. Federal funds, for example, can't be spent on maintenance. We're also subject to the fluctuations in outside revenue sources and in the willingness of outside agencies to spend more money on transportation dollars. And a few illustrations to make this point. State and federal gas taxes have not kept up with inflation. State and federal grants for capital projects have been in decline for a number of years. And although Congress passed a new transportation reauthorization bill, the amount of federal funds remained flat. I'd like to talk a little bit more about how we spend our money and the funding challenges we face. So we own and manage assets worth an estimated $10 billion. We operate and maintain some of the city's largest assets, including our largest single asset, roughly 4,800 lane miles of city streets. Each year, as we budget to most effectively manage these assets, we face a fundamental challenge. Our streets are deteriorating faster than we can preserve and maintain them. 45% of the streets that carry daily commuters, buses, and freight are in poor or very poor condition. Our goal is to reduce this number to 20%. 57% of our residential streets, the streets that people use to get to their neighborhood stores, to visit the local library, or take their kids to school, are in poor or very poor condition, and we want to get this number down to 30%. Achieving these goals, however, would cost $1.3 billion over the next 10 years. And because we lack the resources to keep up with maintenance demands, the gap grows by about $1 million a month. And there are other gaps in the system that also need attention. We have about 55 center lane miles of unpaved streets, and the price tag to bring them up to standard is about $600 million. And half of our sidewalk system does have corner ramps, but to bring all corner ramps into ADA compliance would be about $90 million over 10 years. But I am proud of the efficiencies that we have found in how we do business. We have made great strides in our ability to do more with less. But over the long term, without new revenue, we're going to continue to fall behind. Safety and maintenance, two of our highest budget priorities, and with really good reason. During our transportation funding outreach in recent years, we have heard again and again how important safety and maintenance are to the City Council and to the community at large. So I'm going to start with safety. Last year, we had 37 traffic fatalities in the city of Portland, and that's compared with 34 homicides. So the need to focus our efforts on safety is very clear. To this end, we have been working with our Vision Zero task force to gather new and more refined data in support of our Vision Zero goal of reducing fatalities and serious crashes to zero. A decade ago, the city identified 10 high crash corridors, where 2% of our streets account for a disproportionate number of our traffic fatalities and serious injuries. The data is telling us that we need to look beyond these 10 corridors. In fact, to be effective, we are coming to see that we should be concentrating on a high crash network. We have also gained valuable insight about people who walk. As this chart shows, pedestrians are our most vulnerable users. By focusing on making people who walk safer, we have the potential to make large gains in the overall safety of our system. We've also learned that crash numbers don't tell the full safety story. We have streets that are so unsafe that people who bike and walk avoid them altogether. These streets, we're calling our high-risk network, don't have a high crash rate. Instead, they're areas where we believe there's latent demand. We need to focus on them as well if we're serious about getting our goal of Portlanders to walk and bike safely.
Leah, do you have, for the 37 fatalities in 2015, do you know how many of those were pedestrians?
It was more than 50%, but I can ask Margie for the exact number. Is she here? Okay, we'll get it to you in just a minute.
Yeah, I was interested that in 14 it was more than 50% pedestrians too, which is different from the rest of the country.
This country is experiencing the same stubborn rate of pedestrian fatalities, but I think we are ahead of other cities in terms of the 50% number, but there's an increase nationwide. So Vision Zero is central to our overall safety strategy, and over the last 2 years, we've made great strides toward integrating it into everything that we do. Again, I'd like to thank the mayor and the city council for your leadership on Vision Zero and making it an official policy of the city. By taking that forward-thinking step, you have given a real boost to our work with other city bureaus and with regional and state partners as well. I just returned from a Vision Zero conference in New York City, which is well ahead of most American cities in the Vision Zero effort. And although we're almost 2 years behind New York City in our launch efforts, many of the programs and policies that we are crafting here in Portland are already being lauded as the gold standard for Vision Zero. Later on, I'll have some more detail on our Vision Zero safety investments when I talk about our decision packages. So I had that wrong. I apologize. It's 10 pedestrian fatalities out of 37, so that's not more than 50%. So 3 years ago, Mayor Hales and Commissioner Novick challenged PBOT to get back to basics and annually preserve 100 lane miles of streets. So I'm really happy to report two things about this program. One is we've exceeded our 100-mile goal for the last 2 years, and we're on pace to meet or exceed the goal this year. And second, and perhaps more significantly, with this budget, we have realigned resources to ensure the long-term sustainability of the Back to Basics program. As part of the realignment, we have also secured ongoing funding for our ADA ramp program. For the past 2 years, PBOT has had to take money out of our contingency fund to cover the cost of both of these programs. But I'm pleased to say that we've now fixed the structural deficit in our five-year forecast, fully funding both programs by identifying an additional $3 million of our own resources to close the gap. And our Back to Basics program success is also based in part on our innovative maintenance techniques. An example of this is fog seal. It's a technique that allows us to extend the life of residential streets, and we're using crack seal on our arterial streets for the same reason. Both of these programs are cost-effective, and a little goes a long way. There's also, have you handed out the deterioration curve? Somebody? Okay, so you also have another big handout about our maintenance backlog and our deterioration curve. So we have a maintenance policy where we try to carry out the right treatment in the right place at the right time. In practice, this means we focus on treatments that will keep a street from falling into poor or very poor condition. And as you can see from the handout, the reason is simple. It saves us money. The cost of repairing a road that has fallen into poor or very poor condition is typically 10 times more expensive than maintaining a street that is in fair or good condition. With City Council support, our maintenance effort is producing results. A year ago, 49% of our busy streets were in poor or very poor condition. This year, that figure has dropped to 45%. The fundamental maintenance gap continues to grow, but with further investment, we hope to slow the deterioration curve. Through our maintenance program, we preserve what we already have, but in our capital improvement program, we build what we need for the future. And on this slide, I'd just like to highlight a few of our notable CIP projects. First, in St. John's, we're calming traffic on residential streets and separating bike and pedestrian traffic from freight. In East Portland, we're making it safer to walk and bike to essential services and public transit. And on Southwest Barber, we're working with ODOT on a variety of safety improvements. We must also ensure that our transportation system works for all Portlanders. That's why we're committed to equity as a fundamental value to guide our programs and policies. And I'd like to make mention of a few of our recent milestones. Last year, we reclassified an existing position and hired an equity and inclusion manager to help guide and improve our work across the Bureau. This year, we have reclassified another position to hire a public outreach and engagement coordinator to connect with underserved communities and bring all voices to the table. Biketown, another example, will hire 50% of its workforce from underserved communities. In addition, as we plan bike share stations, we're prioritizing sites within 500 feet of affordable housing, and we will be offering 500 discount memberships for low-income communities. And finally, we are advancing our equity goals by transforming the way we're awarding contracts. We are currently building a list of on-call A&E services firms. To open the door to minority-owned firms, we have made it a requirement that any firm on the list must commit to a goal of at least 20% of their work going to MWESB subcontractors. Before I turn to the decision packages, I'd like to mention one more significant area of work supported in this budget, and that's active transportation. Our active transportation programs encourage Portlanders to bike and walk more as a way to support our climate action goals. Not only are these programs, programs like Sunday Parkways and Safe Routes to School, some of our most popular programs, they're also incredibly effective. For example, thanks to the initiatives like Sunday Parkways and our investments in safe, comfortable biking facilities, we have achieved the highest rate of bicycle commuting of any major city in the United States, 7.2%. And this is up remarkably from 6% in the last census. And I'll add that there are areas of the city now where we are seeing bike commute rates over 30%. So it's pretty phenomenal. All right, our decision packages. I want to talk just briefly about decision packages from last year, because last year you all approved the largest general fund investment in transportation in more than 30 years. And today, I'm happy to report that we're making progress turning those investments into transportation improvements for Portlanders. Three major projects are going to bid this month. One of the most significant of these projects is our 122nd Avenue Pedestrian Safety Improvement Project. We'll build a string of sidewalk improvements and flashing beacons along TriMet's Line 71. This includes sidewalks near Prescott Elementary in the Park Rose neighborhood, three flashing beacons on 122nd Avenue, and filling sidewalk gaps on Southeast Foster Road in the Lentz neighborhood. Because these improvements will improve safety for people walking to transit, TriMet has pledged to provide more frequent service with Line 71, a long-time goal of East Portland communities. This year, our general fund requests continue the city's commitment to investing in the basic safety and maintenance measures that are so important to sustaining a mobile, prosperous, and equitable city. As stewards of critical infrastructure, we submitted 15 requests for the major maintenance and infrastructure replacement funds. We were pleased to find out last week that the City Budget Office ranked two of our projects among the top three. The Traffic Signal Reconstruction Program was ranked number one, and the Northeast Sunderland Bridge replacement was ranked number three. Last year, the Council approved general fund dollars for the Youth Bus Pass Program. Again, we're asking for another $1 million to continue funding the Youth Bus Pass. If it is not provided and PBOT is asked to absorb the program, it will represent $5 million in cuts from other PBOT programs over our five-year forecast. We're also asking for money for Vision Zero decision package. As I mentioned, the data we're collecting with our Vision Zero task force is yielding very valuable insights. And one of the most valuable things we've learned is the outsized role that drugs and alcohol play in crashes. In fully 62% of crashes, drugs or alcohol play a role. So our Vision Zero general fund request targets this disturbing trend of impaired driving. We want to engage the community with a safety and education and awareness campaign and work with our partners in the Police Bureau and Fire and Rescue to educate high school students on the risks of impaired driving. We also hope to partner with Old Town Chinatown bars to reduce drunk driving from establishments that account for a high number of crashes. And we also will provide low-cost safety improvements at high crash locations. We've also asked for funding to create a street plan for connectivity in growing centers. So this is focused on East Portland, which suffers from large block patterns and a broken street grid that pushes all the community's functions onto busy, wide arterials that often have higher than average crash rates. PBOT's request for a street plan for connectivity in growing centers will establish tools for improving street connectivity as development occurs. It will focus on two traditionally underserved areas in East Portland to create more equitable service levels where street connectivity is deficient. We also have a request for Southwest Corridor. The decision package had it in at $420,000. It has now been reduced to $300,000. I don't know if that's reflected in your documents or not.
Lee, I think actually the Southwest Corridor request is listed officially as a special appropriation because that's also a priority for the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability because having a Southwest Corridor high-capacity transit project is essential to achieving the Barber concept plan.
Thank you. That's correct. As I wrap up, I would just like to take a look at some of the big issues that I think are going to challenge PBOT in the city in the coming years. And one of those is going to be managing scarce parking. With community and council support, we've made progress with a more proactive management of parking. We've adjusted downtown on-street parking rates to better manage supply and demand to the benefit of visitors and downtown stakeholders alike. We have launched a program to provide reduced rate parking to low-income workers in the central city. And we have reached the halfway point of our installation of the long-awaited parking meters in Northwest Portland. Looking ahead, parking will be at the forefront of many policy debates. We will continue to work with our community and business partners across the city to use parking effectively as a tool to support neighborhood vitality and commercial activity while recognizing needed changes to meet our climate action goals. Excuse me. This past year was also momentous in our regulatory division. We successfully launched forward-thinking private-for-hire regulations. These regulations have helped us meet Portlanders' demand for more private-for-hire options. They have also made it easier for local entrepreneurs to enter the market. A clear example of this is the successful and frankly very inspiring launch of PDX Yellow Cab by Somali immigrants. The private-for-hire market remains very dynamic, and new technology as it comes online and consumer demands are going to continue to evolve. Our challenge as a city is going to be to remain nimble and creative in our efforts to support a dynamic market and protect our customers. We'll continue to face the challenge of accommodating a growing population within our existing transportation system. If we do nothing, driving is going to continue to grow, and we will continue to see increased congestion, air pollution, and traffic fatalities increase. That's the summary of my remarks, and I'd like to now turn it over to Linda Nedokoven, who is the vice chair of our Bureau Advisory Committee, for the Budget Advisory Committee statements.
Thank you, Leah, and good morning, Mayor Hales and councilors and Budget Committee members. I'm very pleased to be here. Deborah Dunn, who's the chair of our committee, had also planned to be here this morning but is unable to join us. So I'm covering both our remarks. For those of you that don't know, this is our first year having a Bureau Advisory Committee for the Bureau of Transportation as well as a Budget Advisory Committee. Our previous letters of transmittal with our budgets in previous years always asked for that possibility because we feel, given the complexity of the things that PBOT handles, having folks that are studying programs, policies, and plans year-round leads to better budget recommendations. So we're hoping we're on our way to doing an even better job than we've done in the past. I know we're running late, and I'll be very brief. We want to thank the staff for working tirelessly with us, using creative approaches sometimes to our budgeting process to kind of get through some tough decision-making. And I'll talk about that in a moment. We've certainly been very clear in our commitment to the goals of equity, safety, and maintenance, being very consistent with the things that Leah has outlined in her presentation. We want to talk with you about a couple of things. First, the 5% cut that was asked for from our ongoing general fund dollars. We have very few, as you see from your budget materials. We spent actually a lot of time on this, so much time trying to figure out how to make a cut that we actually didn't get to review our ad packages until after the budget was submitted. So I want to say first this morning that we're very much in support of the ad packages that the Bureau has brought forward, and we did discuss them after the fact. We looked long and hard. We began to realize as we understood better the roles that PBOT plays that we were already contributing to the housing, to supporting the response to the housing crisis in many ways. And so our original $500,000 cut was reduced. However, we were left with considering cutting the out of the MUD project was really our only remaining option. For us, we felt that we could not, in good conscience, make a recommendation for a cut to that program. We've been waiting for it for so long, and this is our effort to address Portland's many miles of unimproved streets. These are largely in lower-income neighborhoods. These are areas with many service and infrastructure needs, and this program would address the equity, safety, and maintenance concerns that we're all striving for. It's a very necessary first step to finally begin to achieve more connectivity in these areas. And it's already a very no-frills approach, and it would reduce our bonding capacity if we were to cut that program. So we came forward and in our letter indicated we did not want to make any kind of a cut in our ongoing general funds. And we hope that you don't think we're special or don't know how to follow the rules or whatever. We labored over this. In fact, I sometimes think we neglected other parts of the budget because we were so concerned about making this cut. So with that, I will stop for the moment and available to answer any questions.
Thank you. Well, Andrew and Jung, do you want to walk us through your recommendations and then we'll take it from there?
Hi, Yang Ouyang. I'm the City Budget Office's Analyst for PBOT. I'm just going to quickly go over our recommendations, so particularly in regards to PBOT's general fund requests. So we, as Lias mentioned, we did recommend $1.8 million for the two major maintenance infrastructure projects, so traffic safety reconstruction and the Sunderland Bridge replacement. Those ranked first and third in our ranking process for risk. Risk of failure, I guess. And then we also recommended $300,000 for the Vision Zero package. The request was $500,000. We recommended $300,000, and that was the portion that's related to infrastructure, so the rapid flashing beacons and other pedestrian safety infrastructure. The Bureau's request was for one-time funds, but we recommended $300,000 ongoing to be spent on pedestrian safety infrastructure due to the large numbers of accidents and fatalities. So, and then we also recommended the $250,000 cut to Out of the MUD in light of the housing and homeless crisis. That's it.
Great. Thank you. Questions, comments, discussion?
I have a question. Director Treat, first of all, thank you for an outstanding handout and PowerPoint presentation, and I also appreciate the font sizes and the clarity, especially the font sizes. We didn't get a chance to really talk about the dashboards in the last presentation. I'd like to ask you about your dashboards. And in particular, I want to focus on Vision Zero, because I think conceptually Vision Zero is one of the most important things that you and Steve have brought forward. But I'm fearful that not enough of our friends and neighbors are bought into Vision Zero. And so it looks like, am I right in thinking that your dashboard on total number of serious incapacitating traffic injuries and fatalities citywide is one way of measuring the success of Vision Zero?
Yes, that's accurate.
And that's a very harsh measurement, right? That's the ultimate. Someone who dies because of someone else's reckless behavior. How do we measure the softer compliance issues? The people that are speeding on local roads, folks that are conspicuously disregarding traffic safety signs, treating a yellow as a green or as a chance to accelerate through an intersection. And I must say, it's equal opportunity. It's bikes, it's cars, it's even TriMet buses. And I speak as someone who rides a bus, walks, and also drives. And my sense is, in some ways, while I think Vision Zero is one of your, again, I think it's one of the most important things we can do, and I say that for both personal reasons and for city reasons and philosophical reasons, I'd like to get a sense from you as to how can we win that fight? Because I,
again, I would like to see, we'd all like to see a reduction in serious injuries, and that we would applaud that. But what other kinds of indicators and what kind of support do you need to really make this thing work?
So, Commissioner Fish, thank you for the question. You know, if you look at Sweden, which is the birthplace of Vision Zero and is decades into the effort, their performance metrics of things that they are looking at cover more than the traditional three E's, which are education, engineering, and enforcement. They move into encouragement. They move into equity. But their specific performance measures, while they do track the number of traffic injuries and fatalities, they are also looking at the number of citations being issued by their enforcement authorities. They're looking at entry rates into drug rehabilitation programs. They're looking at on-the-ground campaigns and trying to measure sort of softer things that can be done to actually prevent somebody from getting behind the wheel when they're impaired. So those are all very important things that we need to do. Our task force that is setting up our plan that we'll be entering into next year is looking at all these performance metrics and more. And in order for us to be successful, it can't be the Transportation Bureau alone, it can't be the Police Bureau alone, and it can't be the city alone. It's going to take a big tent of people to surround the issue and embrace that culturally it's not okay to speed. It's not okay to get into a car when you're impaired or when you're in a bad mood and drive aggressively. So I look at the success of Mothers Against Drug Driving several years ago and how effective that was. And it was a bunch of advocates that got together and made it no longer culturally acceptable to drive drunk. And we need to have that same energy and attention from a whole bunch of different groups around speeding, aggressive driving, and traffic fatalities and injuries.
Well, I'm sorry, I guess you're both on. I look forward over the next years I look forward to working with you and Steve to really expand the scope of what you want to do and address the cultural problems, because I mean I've been doing some of my own experiments, like driving within the speed limit on Sandy at rush hour, and what I have found is that by observing the speed limit I've actually become a hazard because of the number of people weaving in and around me because they're in a big rush to get to the stoplight ahead of me. I mean, it's just nuts. And the other thing I just wanted to ask you is, to the extent we're still encouraging people to ride their bikes on high traffic roads, and we've gone ahead and put in a dedicated bike lane, not with a barrier, but we put in a dedicated bike lane, and we've gone even further in some instances, and there's no parking between the bike lane and the sidewalk. So it's in some ways it's one of the safest routes on a high traffic. Are we doing a good enough job enforcing the law to prevent people from blocking those lanes? And do people understand the consequences of delivery trucks, cars, tow trucks, and all the other hazards that routinely block those streets, putting people back into traffic? And do you have any thoughts about what we can do about that?
I think that our police bureau is doing a phenomenal job with traffic enforcement with the resources that they have. Could we do a better job? Absolutely. We all could. We need to focus more energy on educating and encouraging people about the consequences of blocking a bike lane or pushing a pedestrian into the street or a bike into a lane of traffic on a very high-speed network. You know, things that we're doing internally, we are working on a requirement for development that's I call it a public inconvenience fee. So if you have a development going up and they're going to block the entire sidewalk, they're going to have to be adequate signage, like a block before you get there, letting you know when you come along that intersection, you're not going to suddenly be dumped into traffic and trying to figure out how to navigate an intersection or that block when there's a development going up. People who are walking, people who are on bicycles should be given equal consideration to cars when we're impeding the right-of-way. So those are things that we're looking at internally, but we also need to do great public outreach on the impacts of a whole bunch of different users in a really complex system. And so we are building up, we're focusing on our neighborhood greenway network, and we're also focusing on putting in protected cycle tracks wherever we can, but we also need to do a better job at wayfinding signage. You know, when I moved here, I get around everywhere by bike. I couldn't figure out how to access our greenway network. And that's something that we can do that's low cost and easy solutions, developing apps on phones. We do everything on maps, and the truth is I don't ride my bike around with a map in my hand, and most people don't. So we need to do better work at doing signage in the roadway, technology solutions, and educating all users about how the system works for them. Thank you for the question. I appreciate it.
Commissioner Fish, one addition to your first question. I'm really supporting this idea of this being a big tent in terms of Vision Zero and lots of different groups needing to work together. And I just want to toss out the idea of Families for a Safer Powell, which has just sprung up. It's a grassroots group that involves Cleveland High School, the adjacent neighborhood associations. There are things like this sort of popping up across the city, and it's, I think the challenge will be for PBOT to be able to keep track of them and respond to them and, you know, help them gain momentum. But it's, again, a group of people, and we previously had the owner of Hopworks come forward after a pedestrian fatality on Powell, trying to convene a meeting and work with neighbors to see what we could do to raise people's awareness and do more to, you know, get people to behave. And it's a, you know, it's not that there are easy answers, but there are lots of people out there that are willing, I think, to join the effort if we can just find ways to coordinate and learn from each other.
Regarding that Vision Zero measure, it's a little bit of a technical question, but my understanding there's a lag in terms of the data, up to 2 years, and I think the data comes from the state, is that right? And it is such an important measure, as Commissioner Fish mentioned. Is there a way to speed up our ability to get that data so we can be seeing the results more quickly?
There's not an ability to speed up the data, but there is an ability to change the source where we get it from, which is what we're working on. So we're working with fire and rescue to look at transports, right? So they keep track of when anybody is transported from a location. And we're also trying to work with the local hospitals to get, what do you call it when you enter the hospital? They're
emissions.
Thank you. That's such a complicated word. Yeah, so we're working with them to try to change our data sources so we have real-time current information while we're waiting for the state certified data to come to us.
Frida, please.
Because I'm new, I have lots of questions. Anyway, first on your mentioning about the streets in poor or very poor condition, does that include the unpaved streets and lack of sidewalks?
It does not. Okay. We only classify the streets we maintain.
Okay, so does it include the lack of sidewalks if there's a street paved?
It does not.
Okay, so the number really is a lot higher. Okay, because East Portland has a lot. I do want to compliment PBOT for its work on the East Portland in Motion Plan and the work that's been done out there and the grants that have gotten for our Safe Routes to School. There's still a lot more needed, but I do appreciate the work they've done so far. You also mentioned affordable housing and access within 500 feet. What do you define affordable housing? There's two types. I happen to be co-chair of East Portland Action Plan's housing. So we call it by design and by accident.
Yeah, I'm gonna just saying this is Margie Bradway.
Hi, and I believe you are referring to the reference for bike share stations.
Yeah.
We got the low income housing information from the Portland Housing Agency, and they used, I believe, the most liberal definition of the term. I'm not as familiar. Does that answer your question?
It's probably by design. That's okay. Usually what they take. East Portland has affordable housing throughout. Whole 122nd is affordable housing by definitions of what they pay, but not who handles it. The other thing is you're looking at youth passes, and this is a contentious issue in East Portland because PPS is the only one that has chosen to not provide busing and therefore use the local TriMet system. They actually have a special exemption from the state because buses require certain federal guidelines and structure. None of our city buses meet any of those guidelines. I used to work for a bus company who sold them, so I learned a lot about this. We just recently, last week, had a report, a presentation by Opal for their youth wanting bus passes in East Portland. We have the largest concentration of immigrants and low income. They're pushing very hard. If this is considered funding, and I know sometimes the cuts are made and then the mayor puts it back in, there's a lot of political pressure. This is a political issue. we would like this year that Park Rose and Douglas be considered, since we have the largest group that needs it, as well as the fact that the students, even though we provide busing, as one student reported at the last meeting, if you miss your bus, you might have to walk for almost an hour and a half or more to get to school on unsafe streets because we lack sidewalks and streets in our area. So I'd really like to see that, where some equity comes in. Also, you mentioned doing a report on connectivity in East Portland. You mentioned two sites. What are the two sites?
Art Pierce.
No, we'll go through a process to select them, but one of the ones we're probably going to look at would be Jade and Montevilla.
Okay, so I wanted to make sure you weren't necessarily looking at Gateway, because I worked on a street plan for connectivity for Central Gateway several years ago.
We already have one for Gateway. So those are the two that came from BPS in terms of growing centers and the comp plan. So those are the ones we might target, but we want to have a process to select them.
No, I just want, because that's the regional center there, and I want to make sure we weren't, the city has a habit of redoing and redoing and redoing. So I wanted to make sure that wasn't redone when a lot of work was put in there, including with PBOT representatives. Okay, thank you.
Comments, Rob.
Yeah, just sort of stepping back and looking at the 10,000 foot view for a minute. In reviewing this material, it looks like should the voters pass the gas tax in May, it won't have a significant impact on the major maintenance that needs to be done over the next few years. Is that assessment correct or incorrect?
It'll have a significant impact. It's a fraction of what we need. It'll be a dramatic improvement over the past 30 years during which the city has neglected this problem. Will it get worse?
I just worry that the taxpayers who are going to be voting on that measure may be thinking that they're getting a lot more for their money than they are.
Well, we've said repeatedly that this is not everything we need. This is a start. People will see work being done. They will see streets being repaved. They will see flashing beacons being installed. They'll see improvements at dangerous intersections and filling in sidewalk gaps along routes to school. So people will see that we're making good use of the money. We will continue to push the legislature for additional funding. We will continue to press the federal government for additional funding. But this last year, the citizens of Seattle approved a dramatic expansion of a property tax measure for transportation that followed on a measure they passed, I think, 5 years before. They passed a measure which didn't give them enough money. They saw results. They approved an expansion. I'm not saying that means we're going to propose a much higher gas tax in 4 years. It may be that there's other revenue sources that will seem more appropriate then as the gas tax becomes less reliable. But I think that doing something is better than doing nothing. And once we've demonstrated that we can do something well, I think the voters might be receptive to future requests.
Thank you. First, I just want to compliment transportation and Leah and her staff for making my job easier for sitting here and really highlighting some of the equity implications in their budget and Director Bate before this. Just used obviously the contentiousness about the bus passes. Just a general question. Have you had conversations with PPS, and is it at all realistic to expect that they're going to participate in funding any of those bus passes should they be cut?
I have not, and I don't think my staff has either, so.
Okay. And how many students do you know, how many students this impacts?
All Portland, Portland Public School high school students.
Okay. And in terms of the street plan connectivity, what is the positive impact you see on the displacement pressures in the area and or housing issues as we improve aspects of connectivity to and around transportation districts?
Well, so the connectivity is really going to be addressing the built infrastructure as it goes in. So East Portland has traditionally got some of the worst conditions for pedestrians and cyclists. So as new development goes in, it will ensure that the grid pattern of the transportation system is built with first pedestrians in mind and then cyclists. So there is a safe infrastructure built. That answer your question? Okay, thank you. Yeah. And could I just
chime in also. We do have the youth bus pass as one of the top issues we've identified in our strategic work plan for the BAC just last month. Also the idea of a look at how gentrification and displacement issues play out in what PBOT should be doing in concert with the rest of the city on those. So these are top items for the Bureau Advisory Committee.
And a final thought, I guess, is that, you know, racial equity investments anymore have become attractive to philanthropists like Meyer Memorial Trust and, you know, Oregon Community Foundation, who are focusing on their giving based on an equity lens and evaluation. So if that's maybe
that may be a moment to cue up Mr. Henderson about what happened last weekend, because a big part of our proposal to the federal government in the Smart Cities Challenge is about equity.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think a couple of comments there. One, to Andrew's question earlier about how do we get better data on Vision Zero, some of the investments that would be made in the infrastructure, some of the nodes that we would have, so we would see sort of the levels of activity. The connected and autonomous vehicles would be able to send us real-time data that we'd be able to analyze much more effectively. To your question, Secretary Fox and certainly President Obama have made it clear that they see transportation as a nexus for people in the equity conversation, that they want to see these investments for the city. So the 78 cities that proposed plans for what they would that proposed plans for what they would do with the $40 million from USDOT and the additional 10 had a huge equity component. Mayor Hales did a wonderful job, as well as the other six mayors, describing the challenge that faced their cities, but also the opportunities, and particularly the investments that the city of Portland has, and how we'd be able to further leverage that money to make that a reality for people here in the city.
Please.
And this is, I'm coming with my East Portland Action Plan hat, because the additional funding, one-time funding, I believe was 50% was for infrastructure. And I'm hearing a lot of rumble in people within East Portland, because that list that you've chosen does not include really anything significant. 25% of the population's out there for East Portland. What was your highest priority in your matrix, you know, your criteria, I should say, to select the projects you selected? Because I can argue back, this is why East Portland isn't getting 25%.
So there are a number of criteria, and I'm going to let...
you know what, let me ask, actually, that you take this one outside discuss this later, because I do want to get Office of Government Relations in.
We will send around the criteria. There are different criteria in terms of risk, and equity is one of those criteria as well. But I'll send those around.
Okay, and one compliment on your Vision Zero, the flashers, just because I see it, I see the value of them, that I'm between Stark and Division, and the high school has significant walkers, and would you believe those high schoolers are actually using them, whereas I used to see them cutting across Stark all the time. Now, if I'm going out at that time, I might see 30 or 40 kids crossing at the flasher with it working at one time. So they are working, and I get a lot of compliments on them.
That's great.
So just on the prioritization, Frida, what doesn't show up is the system development charge money. And so system development charge can only be used for new stuff. The 50% set aside is only for old stuff. Since East Portland doesn't have as much old stuff to fix, it gets a lot more of the system development charges and not as much of the fixing stuff.
And that's what I need when I go back to respond to people. That is acceptable, working on improvements and maintenance in our school district. That's an acceptable way to look at it.
We'll get you that information. Okay, Commissioner Novick, closing comments, and then we'll move up.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to hit three things. One is that CBO has recommended $1.8 million in one-time general fund for PBOT. I am concerned that some of the folks who are supporting the gas tax proposal, who did so sort of with the assumption that the city is going to continue to invest significant general fund in PBOT, are going to be concerned about that. Have something of a conflict, because the biggest project competing with us is the data center project, which Carmen has told me repeatedly is essential. But if we do get additional one-time revenues, I hope that we will be able to tell the community that we're dedicating some to PBOT. Second, on the Vision Zero education point that Commissioner Fish mentioned, today's Portland Tribune has an article about people complaining about the safety improvements we're making on Foster Road because they will increase some people's trips by 3 minutes during peak periods. And the message I'm delivering that I hope the rest of the council can help deliver to that community is we recognize that 3 minutes added to your commute is annoying. I don't trivialize that, but it will make it safer for kids at Arleta Elementary School to walk and bike to school. So I'm asking people to see those 3 minutes as an investment in the safety of children. Third thing is CBO did not recommend our ask for Southwest Corridor. The importance of that is that if we don't get our work on the Southwest Corridor high capacity transit funded, we won't be part of the discussions as to what that project looks like, and that reduces the odds it'll be a project that's good for Portland.
Thank you all. Thank you very much. Good job. We'll take our next presentation right away for two reasons. One, we're just a few minutes beyond our schedule, and two, we're going to be without Martha for a little while after today. So it's now or not soon. Good morning. Take it away.
Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners, Auditor, and Budget Committee members. For the record, I'm Martha Pellegrino, and I'm the Director of Government Relations. With me today is Deanna D'Souza, a member of our Budget Advisory Committee. I'd like to begin just by thanking the two other volunteer members of our Budget Advisory Committee, and that's Mark Landauer and David Salerno Owens. And I'd also like to acknowledge the good work of our budget analyst, Doug Lee, for his technical assistance on this budget request. So our presentation today is mercifully brief, and I will begin by just giving a quick overview, talk about some significant issues, turn things over to Deanna to briefly touch on our decision packages, and then touch on key performance measures, and we're going to do that in 5 minutes. So the mission of the Office of Government Relations is to advance the City of Portland's legislative and intergovernmental policy objectives. The office provides effective representation, strategic advice, and quality service to the City Council and all city bureaus. We also developed our very first vision statement this year, and if you'll indulge me, I would like to share that with you. The vision of the Office of Government Relations is to be the premier public government relations office in Oregon, known for professional excellence, innovative solutions, the highest ethical standards, and a strong commitment to equity. There are three significant issues that are likely to impact the Office of Government Relations over the next 5 years. First, state lobbying. The office will need to maintain a strong focus on advancing council's priorities at the state legislature. Portland was very successful in both the 2015 and 2016 legislative sessions. In fact, we managed to pass every single bill that we introduced. Coming in 2017, we expect transportation funding will be one of the biggest, if not the biggest, issue facing the state legislature. Housing and homelessness will likely remain a top priority for the city in our legislative agendas for the foreseeable future. And other issues like air quality, emergency preparedness, climate change, PERS, and tax reform will also require a high degree of engagement from the city. And in order to meet these challenges, we may need to explore additional resources for this program in the future. Secondly is our strategic plan. And over the last 6 months, the Office of Government Relations developed our first ever 5-year strategic plan. Now, the plan specifically addresses the office's goals for effective advocacy, customer service, international relations, and advancing equity. And like everything we do, the plan is ambitious. And it specifies our priorities in each of the program areas. But rather than going into detail today, I'd be happy to make that plan available to the committee and to the budget office at your request. Lastly is workload. And in the next 5 years, one of the major issues that we will need to address as an office is an evaluation of staff workload. It's not unusual for program staff in my office to work 50 to 70 hours a week. And these schedules are simply not sustainable over a long period of time. I'm concerned that if we do not address these as an organization, it will be difficult to recruit and retain highly qualified staff. So at this point, I'd like to turn things over to Deanna to touch on decision packages.
Morning, Mayor Hill, City Commissioners, and Budget Committee members. For the record, my name is Deanna D'Souza, and this is my first year serving on the Office of Government Relations Budget Advisory Committee. I am pleased to have the opportunity to appear before you today. I'm here to briefly present the recommendations on the decision package and the requested budget. The committee understood that each bureau was asked to submit 5% cut packages this year, and for the Office of Government Relations, that amounts to just over $70,000. This cut would primarily impact the office's core services in two ways. First, it would require eliminating the Portland State Hatfield Fellow position that was funded last year with ongoing resources. This position serves an important role in supporting the city's legislative relations program. Second, the reduction package would require a cut to interim legislative outreach, travel to Washington, D.C. to lobby for Portland's federal priorities, employee continuing educational and professional development, and supplies to the international relations program. Of these cuts, the committee recommended a package that restores funding to the Hatfield Fellow. This position added much needed capacity to the International Relations Program, which is currently staffed by one FTE. It is also a position that helps to advance the office's equity goals. On behalf of the BAC, we appreciate the difficult decision you have ahead, and again, appreciate the opportunity to present to you. I'll now turn it back to Martha.
Thank you, Deanna. Regarding key performance measures, we've discussed in prior budget years that it's particularly difficult to apply key performance measures to the Office of Government Relations, since there are many variables that influence either the relative success or failure of any particular legislative effort, and we have a number of moving parts. Having said that, we've worked really hard with the budget office to come up with three key performance measures. Two of them are tied to annual customer service surveys that we give to our customers at the city. The other is tied to the number of international delegations that we receive, and that's related to how Portland can make the city a more welcoming international city. So we expect that if funding is not, or funding is cut for the International Relations Fellow, we won't be able to meet the target in that particular performance measure. There were a couple of adjustments, and I assume that Doug will touch on this, to interagency agreements right at the point that we were submitting our budget. And so I'll conclude by saying that the recommendation of the budget office, which is to take a $35,000 cut as opposed to a $70,000 cut, would basically allow the office to meet its performance targets and goals for the coming year. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
His opportunity to weigh in here, and then we'll discuss after that.
Hi, Doug Lee, City Budget Office. A key decision for the Office of Government Relations is the funding for the Hatfield Fellow to support the International Relations Program. Based on the Office's financial situation and key performance measure, we believe that OGR will require the funding for this position to achieve the performance projected in 2016-17. As a result, the funding for this position is recommended.
Thank you. All right, questions, comments?
I just wanted to take this opportunity, having spent a lot of the special session, or the annual session, what do they call it now, down in Salem, and having a chance to observe our government relations team in action. And I think you've all heard this from legislators. We are universally commended for the quality of the staff of our government relations office. Legislators on both sides of the aisle are always complimenting us. And, you know, I've seen them in action, and they are very highly self-directed worker bees down in Salem. Once you get there, they're just all going every which way, but getting a lot done. And I think, you know, getting this inclusionary housing legislation passed in a form that we could support, and it wasn't always in a form we could support, was truly miraculous. And I do want to personally acknowledge Martha's hard work in making that a reality. She did things I still don't even know how she did them, but and got people to ally and make alliances and get things done. So I just want to say you've done a great job, and we'll miss you in the 3 months, but we'll look forward to having you back nice and fresh.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. It's really great feedback. I would say that even the short sessions are still very special in their own right. Trying to legislate anything in 32 days is really quite something to behold. And I really would like to extend your appreciation to the rest of my team, because we are an office with 8 FTE, and yet we run much more like a private lobbying firm out of City Hall. It really is a privilege to do this work and to work on this priority, so thank you.
Martha, because the Hatfield Fellow Grant looms large in our discussion, could you just remind us what the program is, what's the value we get for the $35,000, and any way to sort of put that in context?
Thank you, Commissioner Fish. So I'd be happy to do that. The Hatfield Fellow is a program whereby we get a really amazing staff member vetted through Portland State University for 8 months. And as resources go, if we were to hire a full-time staff member to do the same work, it would probably cost us 2 to 3 times as much. The Hatfield Fellow we have now is Chido Dilawayo, and Chido's actually here. If you'll just wait. Chido was actually involved in the Portland and Mutare Sister City Association before she came and worked as our International Relations Fellow. And so she brings a background and understanding, deeply understanding our sister city relationships. So she has been supporting the International Relations Director. She developed the very first international relations newsletter that, frankly, I think we've ever had. And she really has been driving that. Yesterday, our International Relations Director was out sick, and so Chido took the lead on welcoming a student delegation from Sapporo High School here. And so what the International Relations Fellow does is we expect 90 to 100 international delegations coming through City Hall on an annual basis. And when you consider what that means for international exchanges, economic development opportunities, and otherwise for the city, I think what the Hatfield Fellow allows us to do is provide a great educational experience, but also make a smart use of city resources and how we kind of use that position to integrate.
And Martha, just remind us, over the 8 months, how many hours a week do you get?
So it's a 4-day-a-week program, and in fact, that so it's a Monday through Thursday program. And in fact, Chido's been so successful in our office, we've asked her to stay on part time through the Rose Festival. Because as you know, the Rose Festival for Portland is our premier time when we really highlight our cultural connections with other cities. So we're excited to have Chido stay on for a couple more months.
I move that we now reconvene as the Budget Committee and take care of this right now. Let's end
take
the suspense. Let's end
the suspense. Time,
I think we can do it by unanimous consent.
Nice try. All right. Anyone else, please?
Martha, there's a project that I unfortunately was not able to complete by the end of the session as a tribute to you, but I'm working on it now, and maybe we can get it done for your return. I've contacted Kool and the Gang to ask them to rewrite their classic song, Celebration, and they've got just one lyric so far. It's Pellegration time. Come on, let's pellegrate. We're going to have some good laws tonight. Let's pellegrate. It's all right, et cetera. Hopefully we'll have that completed in a few months.
Only you, Steve, could do that.
So again, bon voyage, and thank you for all of your good work within the office. I would be interested when you get back to have a discussion of, clearly during this session, both the short session and the long session, your staff are working probably more than 70 hours a week. It's very impressive. How do you manage the seasonality of the work that you do, and how could we provide support at the appropriate times? It's not for this budget. I appreciate the budget office's recommendations on this, but it's an ongoing discussion.
And thank you. First of all, thank you, Commissioner Nether, for the song, and Commissioner Fritz, I would welcome that discussion. And I've really appreciated your leadership on ways to make to really balance work and life, and that's something that I think it's maybe the Office of Government Relations is a little behind the curve on that, so I welcome that discussion.
With this last legislative session with the housing, and I co-chair East Portland Action Plan's Housing Subcommittee, I think in the future, because a lot of your legislative requests align with East Portland Action Plan strategies, we're a group of over 100 advocates out there that in housing we did a lot of advocacy this last session directly with legislators, especially these Portland representatives that we know personally. So if you could keep us in the loop when you're starting to advocate, I'm sure, I know I sent a lot of emails, we can advocate right along with you in alignment and add a community voice to the city's voice.
Thank you so much for that comment. And one thing I will say is, whether you knew it or not, we were absolutely aligned, and we really relied heavily